Thanks. I'm Steve. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for having me. This has been a blast. I've looked forward to this every week. And we're kind of on the home stretch here. So what I kind of like to do is kind of get myself current with where we're at in the book and where we left off last week. I remember week one, I kind of introduced myself to the group, got a little bit into phenomenon of craving. Then we did basically 1, 2, and 3 the next week, and then 4 through 8 last week. So I think a good place to start would kind of help me summarize everything we've kind of talked about is at the hour in the fifth step on page 75, and it'll kind of quickly bring me right into the amends process and work in 10, 11, 12. So it says, on returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps, which is page 59. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask, and this is a prayer directive, if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we will walk a free man at last. In is my work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? So, when I got through my three inventories, resentment, fear, and sex conduct inventory, I remember I was doing this over the phone with my sponsor because he was 5 hours away, and I hadn't actually met him face to face. So, I was scared to death I was going to put alcohol back in my body again. So I was fearless and thorough. I wrote a monster inventory, had over 152 things on it. God bless my sponsor, he listened to the whole thing. And, a lot of them we kind of were laughing through some of them because they're basically just all we did was change column one. And we just like, oh my God, these patterns are just embarrassing. So we were able to get through a lot of these things. I got to see things from a different angle. I had one where I just couldn't let go of one with my dad. We kind of, it was one of the big sticking points where I could see what he was talking about, but I just couldn't let go. And it was one of those things where I was like, oh, well, you know, it's just my dad, they're sick, whatever. We looked at the fear. I saw how self-reliance had failed me, and how I was constantly afraid of losing what I would losing what I had, or not getting what I wanted. So I started to have a lot of things to take to 6 and 7. I went through this whole list back on 59, and I just was like, I just want to make sure I don't leave anything out or miss anything. And I have a sheet up here that are the considerations that I do, because every once in a while I'll go back and do an hour in the fifth step just to kind of see where I'm at with things. And because I tend to fall asleep. I get busy, life happens and things like that. So I'll go back, and my step one considerations are, am I clear that I'm powerless bodily and mentally over alcohol, that my life has become unmanageable? Am I clear that I have little to no control over the how much alcohol I put in my body once I take the first drink? This is in regard to the body. Am I clear that this phenomenon of craving is the distinguishing characteristic that makes me an alcoholic? And if I don't have it, I'm not alcoholic. This having to do with the mind. Am I clear that I have a mental obsession that also makes me powerless over putting alcohol back into my body once I've stopped, no matter how long I've stopped for? Am I clear that self-knowledge of these conditions or given sufficient reason to stop will not be enough to keep me sober? I'd read these things and I'd kind of pause and I'd look at my own experience. Like, my sponsor took the time going through this stuff to have me point out examples of me failing at these, doing the very best I could. So it wasn't hard to say yes, because it's like it's hard to argue with your own data. Am I clear that if step one is not experienced on a visceral level, I will not see the seriousness of my condition? I will balk at inventory and amends. I will see that steps 10 and 11 as something I can take or leave, and I will not see how essential it is for me to have access to this power. Like, am I clear on this whole step one thing? Because if I'm not, I'm in trouble. Now, step two considerations, like, and, you know, I have all the things that they call them, the spiritual malady, restless, irritable, discontented, the bedevilments, untreated alcoholism. Based on what I've learned in step one, am I willing to lay aside prejudice and open my mind toward what spiritual terms mean to me? And I have, if not, see step one again. Am I willing to go to any lengths to have a spiritual awakening? And I was explained what any lengths looked like. I was walked through the 12 steps and explained, like, this is, you know, what we're going to talk about. This is what we're going to do. This is where your ego is going to take a shot at you at inventory and at amends. And, you know, when things start to get good, you're not going to want to do this stuff in 10, 11, and 12 and go out of your way to carry this message, you know, because I'm still coming in here thinking alcohol and drugs is my problem, and if I just get clear of that, then I'll be okay. What do I have to do? This was all just pulled out from under me. Like, this, none of this stuff is optional if I suffer from what I got clear on in step one, right? So this brings us to the first half of the first step. Do I now believe, or am I willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? And that was not a difficult question for me to answer. Of course I did, right? And the second step proposition, or the second half of the second step, was when we became alcoholics crushed by a self-imposed crisis we could not postpone or evade, we had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? Now, based on what I learned in step one, God either is or I'm dead. If there is no power that I need to get in touch with, because on my own power, I've proven, given enough time, I will put booze and drugs back in my system again. These are the questions I basically turned in the bedevilments into. Am I having trouble with personal relationships? Can I control my emotional nature? Am I prey to misery and depression? Can I make a living satisfying enough to keep me happy or sober? Do I have a feeling of uselessness at home or at work? Am I full of fear? Am I unhappy? Do I seem unable to be a real help to other people? Now, this works for me, you know, when I'm slightly off the beam, sober, you know, like doing a deal. When I'm not feeling okay, I go to page 52 and I start answering these questions. And anytime I start failing them miserably, I know I've got holes in my program that I got to start looking at. Then it brought me to my step three requirements. Am I convinced my life run on self-will can hardly be a success? What's my experience told me up to now? Do I see my basic trouble that I'm a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? Do I see that trying to manage the world and all its people won't bring me happiness and satisfaction? Am I clear that selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my troubles, not vodka? Do I see that my troubles are of my own making and that life is coming from me and not at me? Do I believe that above everything I must be rid of this selfishness or it will kill me? Do I understand I can't get rid of this self without God's help? Am I truly ready to quit playing God in my life, i.e. the second surrender, the surrender of self-will, right? Katie always told me that it's easier to get a drunk to quit drinking than it is to get them to quit playing God in their life. Do I believe that if I sincerely seek a relationship with God, that he will provide what I need if I stay close to him and perform his work well? And we called that the deal, right? The terms of the deal. And everything going forward is either going to be about this or point back to it. There isn't anything else. Like, there isn't an and after perform his work well, and that's it. And I got the kind of mind that has a hard time seeing the black and white nature of that, right? So after I've gotten all this clarity from my inventories, you know, and I'm looking at these considerations in my hour in the fifth step, it basically takes us right over to step six, right? We emphasize willingness as being indispensable. We're ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable, right? And then we get into the seventh-step prayer, which I was taught was the third step with teeth. And the interesting thing about that, and I love what Chris S. says, he goes, that step six and seven can take you 10 minutes, but it can also take you the rest of your life. And Yeah, that has definitely been my experience. So I've got this list. You know, I get up off my knees. I've got this list, and you know, we started making out a list of amends I was willing to make. And what we do in my lineage is we have these little cards up here, these little index cards, which you can take pictures of, or I can email you stuff with this. But it's basically got the name, the person, the institution, a plus or a minus, whether I'm willing or unwilling, the address, fine, their phone number, the harm that I'm aware of, right? And if not clear, I write ask. And I talk to my sponsor first, then make the approach to set the appointment. I've had some things blow up in sponsees' faces trying to see, like they see him at Starbucks. Ooh, let me, you know, and all of a sudden they got to go back and make an amends for the amends they just made. You know, things like that, right? Ex-girlfriends, I don't want to get into that. And then basically on the back, actually on the bottom of this one, it says, only my mistakes are be discussed. Don't criticize or argue. If I owe money, make the best deal I can. Don't emphasize spirituality, God, or AA unless asked. Use common sense, in other words. And when I have this little card, because they're going to get nervous, and they basically says, this is for you on the back. You tell them, this is the harm I'm clear on. Then you ask them if there's any other harm I'm not aware of that they need to tell me about. And then I have S-U-A-L, which means shut up and listen. And write it down, right? Do you need or want to tell me how any of this hurt you personally or you or your company? S-U-A-L, right? Is there anything I can do to make this right? And basically shut up and write it down. Now, the great thing about this thing is, you know, my head is going to run during these amends, right? And I'm going to tell you guys some amends stories that I won't. I mean, our book goes through a bunch of pretty much any situation you can get into. And what I try to get people to do, if they fall into any of these categories of types of approaches, people I don't like, owing money, crimes, alimony, unrightable wrongs, you know, domestic troubles, adultery, things like that. We'll go and we'll read the directions, right? And we'll make the card out, and then I'll send them out to make three approaches, right? We'll set an appointment, they'll go, and they'll knock on the door, they'll sit down with them. The pandemic's made this interesting. Katie had sent me something that she had done with her girls where when they became aware of amends that they needed to go, that maybe they couldn't see them in person, but and this needed to be done in person, they would write them, say, look, this is the harm clear, and as soon as it's safe, I would love an opportunity to sit down and make this right with you. And you just kind of say, look, I'm willing to do this. I'm not going to shy away from this, but please tell me when you're comfortable. And that had worked really well for it. I had been going kind of along, and you know, as soon as I start making these amends approaches and these cards, I got all these little piles of things I'm willing to do, things I'm not willing to do, and then the nevers. And I had three nevers, okay? And when this pandemic hit, I was kind of taken aback by, you know, how bad I reacted to, you know, teaching outdoors, traveling, doing what I do, and then homeschooling an 8-year-old. And I had things and just seething rage and anger come out of me that I'm embarrassed to sit up and share about. You know, basically writing inventory on an 8-year-old for acting like an 8-year-old. You know, and I'm calling my sponsor every week and I'm going, man, I'm like, I'm praying, I'm meditating. But what I hadn't realized that I had done was I started kind of mailing it in. You know, I'd do the evening review and it would be kind of be like, am I resentful, selfish? Did I, you know, and just kind of going through the list and just kind of, you know, more out of routine than out of like watching for trouble, you know, watching for these things. And my ego tells me I'm doing great because I've got 8 guys a sponsor and we do this circle and triangle check-in on Zoom and all this other stuff and I'm waking up and I got a prayer and meditation discipline. And meanwhile, I start losing my stuff and I'm calling my sponsor and he gets me back on two-way prayer and writing. And I started to realize when I started getting real quiet with this stuff that my head would start racing, and it took me a little bit of time to get back into the quiet and the asking and the listening and just having my pen move and trying to see what comes out of it. And I had these three never amends that I was not, I couldn't get in touch with them. I didn't know where they were. I didn't know how to get in contact with them. I was afraid to, because one, was in the field that I'm in now, and of course I know how this thing is going to go, and it's going to obviously go terribly, and he's going to be very vindictive and make it so I can't work, and I won't be able to take care of my family, and you see what my head's starting to tell me. And I love that our book says 9 times out of 10, the unexpected happens, which means 90% of the time, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about, right? And I found that to be more than true. Once I start saying this stuff out loud or seeing things from a different perspective other than what my egoic mind tells me, because it's always going to be done out of ego and fear, and I'm always going to catastrophize everything. And I had been getting pretty heavy back into this two-way prayer stuff, and all of a sudden the willingness to make these amends, all of them, was there. And I happened to start Googling things differently and looking into different things. And damned if I didn't find on Facebook one of the people I used to live with that I skipped out a month of rent on. And I found this other guy's contact information down in Florida who I hadn't seen in probably 15, 18 years. And then I found out this other lady who had moved from where I used to live, had moved out to Nebraska and sat on this board for the Girl Scouts. And I'm like, oh my God. So naturally, I'm like, all right. So I reach out through LinkedIn. I reach out through her email. I reach out. Nothing. Crickets, right? Now, I didn't owe a lot of money to this lady, but it bothered me. It happened back in my 20s. And I'm no longer in my 20s. Right, and this was, and it made every inventory or every conscious thought of people that I had screwed over or cheated out of money, and never was able to get in touch with her. So I wrote a check out for about double the amount of what I owed her, and I sent it to this thing that obviously the Girl Scouts in Nebraska mean a lot to her. She's sitting on the board, so I had sent it out there in her name, and then I watched that disappear. The next one was a woman I used to live with. We were really good friends, and she ended up moving out and buying a house. And I was stuck there, basically with this new person that bought the house. And I was renting a room for her down in South Florida. And instead of paying my rent, I got into a golf tournament thinking, if I do well, I'll have plenty of rent money left over. Well, I missed the cut. And it was one of those things where I just kind of branched off, and I reached out to her on Facebook Messenger, okay, and I said, hey, I don't know if you remember me, blah, blah, and she was like, oh my God, how are you doing? And I was like, look, I've harmed you, and I kind of laid out what I did, and she was like, wait, what? Completely forgot about the whole thing, and I'm sitting here in my head going, oh my God, she's going to think I'm this and that, because we were pretty tight, we were really good friends, her and her husband, we would hang out and do all this other stuff, and that amount of money I basically let get in between. I don't know about you, but I'm the kind of alcoholic that has a hard time having good relationships with people, and this was one of them, okay? And I'm asking her, I give her my number, I'm asking her for her number, hey, I'm so great, that's so great that you're doing that, and I'm trying every this, that, the other way to try to get her to get on the phone or meet up. Or I was going to go down to Florida after the pandemic out to see my mentor. And I couldn't get her to do it. It made her so uncomfortable. And then she'd start bringing up stories of funny things that happened when we were living together and stuff. So I basically said, look, I'm happy to pay you whatever amount you think would be the same today versus there. And she's just like, look, I don't want any extra money. But I paid her over Venmo, and I wasn't working. This was during the pandemic. My wife's freaking out. She's going, are you serious? You're doing this now? And I'm going, yeah. And I was like, I feel like I have to. And we weren't, I wasn't working in the city. I wasn't teaching, doing much. And so there was like literally no money coming in, other than what I could kind of scrounge up around based on those inventories. I read you guys last night when one stage character of mine wrote inventory on another stage character of mine. And I ended up paying that off. And this last one was one that really got me. I was dreading this one because I thought this one was going to make me lose the current job that I had. And I'd called and I basically had told them what I stole, feeling like it was owed to me, kind of stuff. And he basically just squashed it. He's just like, man, he goes, that's just, thank you for telling me this. And I had to explain it twice because his wife and him worked together. So I had to explain it to her and to him. So I had to do like a 2-for-1 deal on the phone, and they couldn't have been nicer about it. And it was just one of those things where this one I haven't yet found a charity that I need, because I got to send the money back out into the universe, the way it's recommended. But I got to find out one that's kind of close to his heart, kind of a thing. And I know there's one. I just can't really place the name of it yet, but I'll find out. And the last one I want to tell you guys about was one that happened with my dad, and it was an unexpected consequence. Because you know how deep family stuff goes, and I had a really hard time letting go of a lot of the abuse and the things that happened to me when I was a kid, and this one thing, this whole Catholic thing growing up, and I had a big problem with it. And when my son was born, he basically called me and tried to tell me that I had to get my son baptized and whatever. And I mean, I lost it. It was like 30 years of rage just kind of came out of me, and I just clicked. And I did not talk to him for over a year. I punted it. You can't talk to me like that. Your days of giving me spiritual advice are over. And I wouldn't take his calls. I wouldn't let my family talk to me. I was just like, just one of those egoic alcohol. And this is sober, guys. I can't even blame this on drinking. This is sober, trying to live this process. And I'm like a dog with a bone. I won't let it go. And my sponsor is on me going, Steve, this stuff actually has the power to kill. I mean, how are you feeling? And so he made me make an appointment with Katie. And she is like the step 5 inventory champion of the planet. And I've never heard, and she's the one who taught me how to hear inventory by having me read it to her. And it was one piece of inventory on my dad, and it lasted 2.5 hours. And what happened was I explained what he did. Dad called him to, told me to get my son baptized. And how it affected me, right? All these areas. And instead of her just kind of, she starts asking me questions. What was the family dynamic like? Where did you grow up? What was the money situation like? Was mom working? Were they happy? And all of a sudden, she's painting around this resentment. All of a sudden, she's broadening the picture. How many kids in the family? Where'd you fall in that lineup? Blah, blah, blah. Were they drinkers? Catholic? What was that like? And I'm sitting there going, wait a minute. I think you're getting a little bit off topic here, right? And she starts rolling through all of this stuff. Well, what are some of the other things that he did that you're upset about? And boom, boom, boom. What are some of the things he did that were good? What? Well, he taught me how to drive. He taught me how to play the sport I now do for a living. He made every game. Taught me how to drive. All this other stuff. And I can hear Katie nodding on the other end of the phone because I know her wheels are turning because she's about to pounce. And she goes, what are some of the things he does that are better than you do? And I was like, I wasn't ready for that one. She goes, he had 4 kids, you have 1. Was he a better provider than you? Yeah. Yeah. Especially during that time, right? What was his relationship like with his dad? Well, my grandfather died of alcoholism. He was an angry man. My dad got his sense of self and worth out of playing sports and, bonding with his dad on that level because they didn't have very many other skills where they could find common ground with, right? And I saw that was one of the gifts that I now have with my son. But goddamn, you can't talk to me like that, right? And all of a sudden, what she's starting to do is she's starting to pull me out of the resentment. And she's humanizing my dad. And I'm starting to see that he too is, like me, spiritually sick. Right? And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden I'm just kind of pushing back from the table, and I'm going, whoa. Right? And oddly enough, any situation I've had with an authority figure in my life, job, relations, anything like that, I've always blown that relationship up. And it's been the same inventory, just a different face. Because I was never, you know, I always used to, you know, balk at this whole inventory, like as if there's something on the inventory that I don't know. Well, you know, whatever you don't get rid of during a fifth step, you get to keep. And I can't live that way anymore. And I can't do the work the way I used to do it 2 years ago. I have to constantly keep trying to, you know, go deeper with this process because I like the effect produced by it, much like the way I drank and drug. I like the effect produced by it until it stopped working. And now when I'm doing these spiritual principles sober, I have to keep progressing and getting deep, perfecting and enlarging in this process. Because if I stay static, keep doing the same things the same way, I don't get the same effect. And I'm an absolute pig for liking the effect produced by it. So I have to constantly find a way to keep growing. Because if I don't, my experience shows me, I will put booze and drugs back in my body again. And I'm still afraid of that happening because I remember feeling like I was, running in quicksand and not able to quit the last time, you know. And it took me 6 years to put that first drink I picked up back down, knowing things about, you know, maybe I shouldn't, right? So this process, I end up punishing him for a year. And during that year, my mom developed dementia-like symptoms of which I didn't know. And it would be the last year that I would know my mother as my mother. So what this resentment took was the last year quality of life that I would have with my mother. Because you can't talk to me like that. And it also took the last year that my son could have got to know his grandmother. I mean, the level of selfishness and self-centeredness in that is astonishing. Right? And they had come back during that time. They had come up to visit my family, my brothers and sisters over in Pennsylvania. And I sent my wife and my son over. I wouldn't go so he could see him. And then that's when they found out that they were having those issues. And he got on a plane the next day and left and went back. It hurt him that much, right? And about 6 months later, they're back up visiting again. And my mom has a spell, and she ends up over in the Lehigh Valley in Pennsylvania in the hospital. And during that time, I'd had that meeting with Katie, and I got to see things from a totally different angle. And she took that resentment that I had for 40 years and poof, right? And I got to make amends to my dad in the parking lot there, and I got to watch him heal. That was powerful. Like, you know, when you get to hear somebody tell you how when self shows up, that I learned all this stuff about an inventory and I found the objectionable nature of these things and I took them to God in 6 and 7. When I sit across from another person and I get to have them say, look, this is what it's like when you show up. Remember, ain't glad the wind stopped blowing, right? When I'm the wind, right? And that's why people look at me nuts when I stop drinking and I say, wow, I'm not drinking now. And they're just like, Jesus, this guy's insane, right? And, you know, everything should be okay then. And, you know, this is where the ego takes another run at you is in inventory and amends. And this is where we get scared. Because I'd rather stay with the devil I know because I can manage that and survive. When you give me something new that I don't know how to manage, I'll run back into the bottle rather than take that trust fall. Right? And I, you know, thinking that I'll be able to make it back. And I almost wasn't able to make it back. It took me that, you know, bright light experience on my back porch in order to get me here. I was surrendered. I did not come in here from detox. I did not come in here It was one of those things where my life crashed and burned, and I hit such a spiritual bottom, this intense psychic pain that I'd never experienced in my life. That is what brought me in here, and it's literally what drove me and continues to drive me through this work. It was traumatic, right? I suffered from a level of spiritual narcolepsy before this that I wouldn't wish on anybody. And that's what alcoholism is, you know. And for 18 years, I had no idea what I was up against until I started talking to people who had gone into this book. And, you know, I'd hear things like, I'm not a big quoter of any other book, but there's two things out of the 12 and 12 that I absolutely adore because it points right back to this. AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in nature, which if practiced as a way of life can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. That's one hell of a promise. And then the flip side of this, unless each AA member follows to the best of his ability our suggested 12 steps to recovery, he almost certainly signs his own death warrant. That is not a pleasant promise, but it certainly has been my experience. And it's one of those things that keeps me driving into this process. You know, it keeps my feet to the fire kind of thing. So those are kind of some of my amends experiences. And then as soon as I start doing this, I will line a guy out on how to start practicing 10 and 11. Right now, 10 is basically steps 4 through 9 on a micro daily basis kind of thing. So this is part of my daily reading. I read 84 to 88 every day and 60 to 63 so I can constantly touch the root of my problem, right? So it says this thought brings us to step 10, meaning this thought is continuing to make and finish amends, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. You think they're thinking it's important to continue here? How many times have you heard the word continue, right? Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And then some of the best promises in the book are right here in this next paragraph, which you guys can read. But that right there, that paragraph, is what I call the 4 and 4. When any of these four things crop up, they tell me to do four things. And I used to have to write this down on one of my trusty 3x5 cards because I was so shot out that I couldn't remember what pages this stuff was on. I wasn't reading this stuff early on in my first 90 days. I was trying to just not drink and go to meetings and stay afloat. So I used to write down, watch, ask, turn. And I'd just take that throughout the day. Watch, ask, turn. Watch, ask, turn. Watch, ask, turn. Watch for these things that, all these manifestations, I learned that how I show up in step 4. I know what happens when the brother shows up, when the colleague shows up, when the husband, the father, right? I know all those manifestations of self and the characters and the belief systems that I will take out to during the day. Because my day is not crazy drastically different every day. Right? I'm going to have common things, common stage characters showing up on a daily basis. So it behooves me to pay attention to how they show up because I create harm. And I'm tired of making amends to people, right? So it gives us a warning here in the middle 85. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. It tells us we have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition, and every day is a day we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee, thy will not mine be done? It says we've begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. To some extent we have become God conscious. We've begun to develop this vital sixth sense, which is intuition. Right? Listening to that inner voice. And it can be as simple as being at the grocery store and being like, Fruit Loops, Rice Krispies. You know? Invite God into every area of your life, because these are the areas. When I fall asleep in any area of my life, that's the area I'm having trouble in. Mm-hmm. Right? Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy in this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude. And that's one of those proper attitude promises back on 55, paragraph 4. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. These are the essentials for spiritual growth. Then it gives us the evening review. Now, if you've got, I have all this stuff separated out up here, like these the daily prayers that 10 and 11 have, and the meditation practices up here. It's got the step in. It's what I give my my sponsee. Some of you guys got this stuff last week, but it basically gives us all the times when we should move to like a prayer, like the watch prayer, the throughout the day prayer, the inspiration prayer, like I just explained. So look for these areas in your life, and if you're not doing them, try out some of it. I never got anywhere with this stuff until I started to practice it in my daily life, and it might be as simple and as dumb sounding as Fruit Loops or Rice Krispies, you know. But you got to start somewhere. That's how it kind of starts the ball rolling. It's like these steps aren't like a linear process. It's a circular thing. Everybody's step one starts with somebody else's step 12. This whole 4 weeks I've been talking about is a 12th step, right? For some people, it's, you know, their first step. You know, it's how we kind of got to get this stuff on us, right? All right, so it says when we retire at night, were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? And I just go back scanning through my day from the last person I talked to. Mm-hmm. And just kind of go backward. And if anything pauses and sticks with me, I'll be like, ooh, maybe I should write that down. I'll take it into my plans for the day in my on awakening, which incidentally is why the evening review is first and the second part is on awakening. And everybody's like, why would they put evening review before on awakening? Because it shows where the plans for the day come from, right? So it goes through all the questions which are on the sheet. So then it says, on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Where did we get those? In our evening review, if you're doing them. We ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. Sounds an awful lot like that fourth column in our inventory process, right? So we should have an idea of how we typically show up on a day-to-day basis so we know what to watch for. We know what we're turning from, right? This has to be practiced as a way of life for me. Because when I fall asleep to this stuff, I start acting out in different ways. It can be anger, shopping on Amazon, you know, whatever. Whatever that shows up like, right? Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. And I have stuff on thought life up here for you guys. If I won't get into, we don't have that much time, but... In thinking about our day, we may face indecision, right? Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or a decision. That's it. That's it, right there. It's like if you have some uncertain thing going on, say, God, what do you think? Pause. Get out of that mind. Ask for something else. And if you've been doing this stuff and practicing this stuff and spending time with this power in the morning and you've cleared the street, you know, through inventory and amends, this voice will get louder. Right? We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. Let's see. What used to be a hunch, or occasional inspiration, gradually becomes a working part of the mind. We find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely on it. Right? I would love to go to a meeting where they have an open discussion meeting where he says, we may pay for this presumption and all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. I would love to hear people talk about their experience with that. I thought it was God's will, but because I've got a few, man. They are just some of the ridiculous stuff that runs through my head, which is why I need directions on how to manage my life with an alcoholic mind. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that will be shown all through the day. This is the throughout the day prayer. What our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom of self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. Right? Now, this is a good sentence down here because I got a lot out of this. It's a very short little piece in the book, but if circumstances warrant, we ask our wives to join us. I actually did that once. My wife and son joined me in meditation. It was actually a pretty cool experience. They haven't done it since, but my son, when he was really little, when I'd be in there, because I used to go in, and when he'd have a hard time sleeping, I'd kind of hold him. And that's where I do all my prayer and meditation. It's become a real nice feeling room. And he used to just kind of stare at me, you know. And it's kind of cool, because anytime I start getting upset now, he'll stop me and go, "Do you need to go meditate?" And I'll sit there and I'll laugh, and I'm just like, "Man, yeah, I do actually. I got to take a minute." It reminds me to turn, you know. And this is stuff he was doing since he was like 6. You know, he'll be 10 in May. So it says, as we go through the day, we pause. Now, this is something I use for the 10th step. It's found in the 11th step, but it's P-A-R-S, pars, like a golf thing. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful. We ask for the right thought or action. Constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show. And that restates the deal. Remember that deal on stay close to him and perform his work well? God's going to be the director. That restates the deal. Points back to step 3. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. These are great promises as well. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does. That's one of my sponsor's favorite lines. Used to drive me nuts. But this part of the book also tells us to feel free to look at outside literature, you know. And I remember speaking somewhere in Virginia and on Zoom, and I'm explaining the extended third column and how I'd been getting into this DeMello stuff and attachments and reading these other books. And I see this guy in the Zoom box going like this, like, "I need your phone number information." And it was during a period of time where I was kind of struggling. It was where I wrote this pandemic thing that I won't get a chance to talk about, but you guys can certainly read afterwards. It's where I started going into inventory at a much deeper level. And this guy shared with me an exercise that was step 6 and 7 on an entirely different level. Like, and he sent me this email, and it just basically told me to kind of, you know, read the third step prayer, and he sent me all these definitions of these character defects that people who had done this exercise, there was like 30 things on it, because I had added a couple to it, and he had me write out every single definition for every one of those character defects. I had to look them up, and I wrote them all out, and what I had to do was, for 30 straight days, 3 times a day, sit down and kind of make up my own 7th step prayer and insert those words and read the entire definition out for every single one of them. And I'm sitting there going, "Why the hell would I want to do that?" Right? And I was like, "All right, there's spiritual virtue in following directions, and this guy seems to be pretty adamant about it, and I've kind of chased this rabbit down this rabbit hole." So I took 30 days. And I'm starting in the morning, and it's taken me 15 minutes each time. So I'm going out from work, sitting in my car, because I have to do this out loud. Mm-hmm. I can't read it to myself. I have to do it out loud. And I'm sneaking out to do a quick meditation session. I got one in the morning before I leave for work, one at work, and one when I get home from work, 3 times a day. And I start going through this process, and about 2 weeks into it, when I start finding myself in these situations that I've been watching for, and these character defects start popping up, what do you think starts popping into my head as soon as I feel the discomfort? The definition for the character defect. And all of a sudden, it stopped me. And I went, "Oh my God, that's crazy." Right? And I did this for 30 days, and it gave me a much deeper perspective of what 6 and 7 were, and what they meant, and what these defects of character meant, and how they showed up. And there were many of them that just went poof. And it was another way that I could get a little bit further along in this process, where I felt like I was lighter. I felt like I was more the person God kind of put me on this planet to be, instead of the one of my favorite quotes. I mean, anything I'm sharing with you here doesn't come from me. The stuff that comes out of my head isn't very spiritual or profound. And I've been fortunate enough to be exposed to a lot of people who do this work a lot and have a lot of perspective that they're willing to share. And I remember somebody asking me, do you remember who you were before the world told you who you should be? And I was like, whoa, no. And I'm watching my son, and as he grows, I'm trying not to get any of that on him. You know? And it's been a really wild process. I shared with you guys last week that inventory at the dentist's office, and my wife saw it. I mean, this stuff, good or bad, spreads into other areas of your life. Whether it's active alcoholism or active recovery, this stuff touches every aspect of your life, and it's really, you know, up to how hard you're willing to work in this process as to how that lands on the people closest to you. And it's been pretty wild, you know, watching my relationships, how they used to go and how they're going now. And on the back of those amends, after we came back from the pandemic, I ended up getting a promotion and a huge raise. I'm like, really? Like, this stuff, I'm sitting on this stuff thinking I know how things are going to go and what the benefits are going to bring. And meanwhile, what my head is telling me, and I start working hard on its behalf to make these things come true, I'm really selling myself short. You know, and there's just no telling how big this thing can get. The more I get myself out of the way, and the more I'm willing to go deeper. You know, the more I'm willing to say, all right, what areas of my life am I not bringing this power into, and how am I doing with my sponsees? You know, and you know, am I staying current with them? Am I staying up to date with them? Am I mailing in my evening review and in my time? Now, these are the things that I've started to realize that I can help other people with, because when they start struggling with their life, and I've already, you know, experience similar things, it makes me a more effective sponsor because I can be a little bit more transparent. I can be like, hey, this is... I mean, I had one guy who had a financial fear that got a tip at work. It wasn't supposed to be a tip. It was more like a bribe, like, hey, you know, this kind of thing. And he calls me up and starts trying to sell me the bullshit his head's been telling himself. And I go, oh, cool, then you'll have no problem telling your boss what you just did. And then there's that awkward silence on the other end of the phone. And it was the first time I'd had a sponsee yell at me and go, what am I supposed to do, lose my job? And this is a guy that's a convicted felon. And I said, yes. And he was like, the look on his face. So I had to call my sponsor. And I had to have him call my sponsor. Because I was like, look, this is not just coming from me, okay? So he ends up calling my sponsor, and it's like calling in the big one. You go one up the chain kind of a thing. And he walked him through it and talked him through it. And he went in and explained the situation. He thought it was, you know, a tip or whatever, and it was really driven by fear. And he wasn't fired, and he just explained the situation was, but the guy that he worked for all of a sudden started to really trust him and respect him now, mm-hmm. right? And who do you think gets a raise not too long after that? That guy. And that's the coolest thing for me. I can't see it when it's on me. I can't see the picture when I'm in it. But when I start helping guys and start watching this stuff happen for them in their life, it makes this whole thing worth it because I can just watch it. Because this stuff never feels good when you're going through it until you get through it, right? And sometimes the only way out of pain is through it. And this process is the lily pads that I use to get through that. So I hope that's a comprehensive look at what my experience has been. And Mark, thanks for having me up here, man. I appreciate it. That's all I got.